Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Wilmington Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, this is Ann Revelle Petcher, your host of Wilmington Business Radio. We have a fun show today. We got Susan Eaton from the Convention Center to come back and co-host with us today. Hey, Susan.
How are you, Ann?
I can't believe this weather. I'm so thrilled.
Oh, it's good golfing weather. That's all I have to say. We have a great show today.
We do.
We have special guests, and I think you're going to let us know who they are.
Yeah, it's a big secret, but I'm unveiling the secret. We have, what's really fun is Susan brought along with her the Convention Center's executive chef, Scott Frazetta. Hello, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I can't wait to talk about food.
Good. Me too.
That's probably better if I talk about it instead of eat it. But before we talk to Scott, we're actually going to talk to Scott and Twyla Satterfield. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's so great to have you here. You know, Scott and Twyla came to the top of the heap today when we were talking about content for the show because there's an upcoming event at the Convention Center. It's mm-hmm. the 2014 JDRF Hope Gala.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful annual event that we've enjoyed hosting at the Convention Center with JDRF. And both Scott and Twyla are very involved this year.
And they're being honored. So why don't you guys tell us a little bit about what JDRF is, and then tell me, if you would, how you got involved.
Well, JDRF was actually founded by a group of parents in 1970 whose children were type 1. And their
type 1 diabetic.
Yes. Their mission was to raise money for research.
Okay.
Bring about awareness.
Okay.
And obviously the mentoring side of it for the actual children and their families. And JDRF, they have grown obviously tremendously through the years, and they are now a foundation whose mission is to remove the impact of type 1 diabetes from people's lives until there is a cure one day.
That's very interesting. So when you talk about removing the impact, what kind of impact have you all experienced?
Well, 14 years ago, our daughter, Lauren, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and she was 5.
Oh, my.
And, to say it was a major change in our life is an understatement, and it certainly, more importantly, was a major change in her life. What we learned is that every day from here on out was going to be a day made up of rituals and routines that we had never experienced. Mm. And it is truly a impactful disease on an individual, but it also is an impactful disease on a family. And it is truly a family disease. And we, you know, you go from living a normal life, not thinking about what a child is necessarily eating or drinking at mm-hmm. that moment, or what their activity levels are and how that's impacting them, to all of a sudden everything that they do, you have to be aware of. And it changes everything. Mm-hmm. It changes the phone calls. Can Lauren spend the night over tonight? And things like that, because obviously, you know, there's challenges and issues, and with a young child like that, that maybe other parents and
sure.
friends were, you know, are not going to be comfortable dealing with. So, you have to deal with the emotional side, and you clearly have to deal with the medical side.
Absolutely. Well, and I would think so. There's obviously the social issues that surround it,
right.
the impact that it has on your lives. You're both busy professionals. You run a critical economic development organization, and Twyla, you're an interior decorator designer. How does it impact you on a day to day basis?
Well, initially, when Lauren was diagnosed, obviously the family, we all were part of that care plan,
sure.
in a big way. And it was, you know, monitoring through the night. Mm. It was staying in touch with the schools, having to be available in case of emergencies. As the years have passed, our goal has been for Lauren to kind of take this upon herself as her responsibility. She needs to own it,
mm-hmm.
Because ultimately she has to care for herself.
Right.
So, you know, as she has, doesn't mean that it, we certainly still do not have those events where things get a little hairy and blood sugars are out of range and things like that. But she has stepped up to the plate as all of these people do, and it's quite amazing. And they own the disease, and they I guess it becomes ingrained in them,
sure.
Just as if we get up and brush our teeth in the morning.
Yeah.
That's how much it becomes part of their world. In fact, our daughter, there have been numerous times when I have asked, have you checked your blood sugar or have you done your injection? She's already done it, and I didn't even see it.
Did you get a roll of the eyes?
Yeah, she's become truly that good at it. And when you're talking about 6 to 8 injections a day, and you're talking about checking your blood sugar 8 to 10 times a day, it's pretty amazing what these people live with.
Let's take a step back and help me understand. As a parent, I didn't have that experience. How does this present itself? How did you find out that she had diabetes?
Well, there are classic symptoms that are pretty much across the board. You will notice severe weight loss. You'll notice extreme mood swings, mm-hmm. Constant thirst, constant urination. Those types of symptoms are typically how it shows itself. And I'd like to point out that 85% of all type 1 diabetics are adults.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so this is something that's a lot more widespread in our population than people realize.
And once you have diabetes, you don't grow out of this, right?
No, that's type 1 diabetes is different from type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
Because type 1, there is no function to the pancreas, which produces insulin.
I see.
Okay, so the insulin has to be administered into your body either through injections or a insulin pump.
Interesting.
And that you have to have is your lifeline. A type 2, they have the ability to actually reverse diabetes, mm-hmm. because it is a completely different process in their body.
Isn't that interesting?
So, mm-hmm. And I wanted to point out that our involvement with JDRF, when Lauren was diagnosed, there was no support group in the Wilmington area, nor mm-hmm. was there a pediatric endocrinologist. In fact, we drove to Duke every 3 months for care at that time. And fortunately, now we have an outstanding pediatric endocrinologist at New Hanover Regional Medical Center. She and her team do an amazing job. I would say it was a few months after Lauren's diagnosis, myself, along with a few other parents, actually formed the JDRF chapter here. That is how it all began.
Great. So real grassroots.
It is a grassroots organization. And since 2001, we have raised over $7 million towards research.
Excellent.
just in our branch.
Wow. And so that all goes to research?
82 cents of every dollar goes to research.
That's amazing.
And so they do a remarkable job with their fiduciary responsibility.
Is it a professional association here, or is it just professional and this is all volunteer? How does that work?
Well, there is a level of professionals that work within each branch.
I see.
Okay, but the majority of work is done through volunteers, and those volunteers are typically parents or type 1 diabetics themselves.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How you talked about 85% are adults. Is this adult onset? Or is this, they've had it their whole lives and didn't know that?
Or they transitioned from being a 16-year-old or a 15-year-old into adulthood.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. But most type 1 diabetics find out when they're younger?
Yes, but you are seeing a trend where some of your diagnoses are occurring in the late 20s, 30s.
Interesting.
When people think they're kind of beyond that.
Uh-huh.
They're looking maybe for a type 2 diagnosis,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the reality is they're having to hear the word type 1 diabetes. So.
Yeah, I don't think that most Americans know the difference between type 1 and type 2.
Well, the only difference that I'm familiar with, we have a little bit of history in our family. two family members are type 2 diabetics, mm-hmm. and they sort of, I guess, through the years, through different things, mainly your diet and weight gain and things like that, I think that contributes to type 2 diabetes. And right. I've seen several people in the Wilmington area that I know adopt type 2 diabetes as well. And one was diagnosed as a type 1, mm-hmm. just as you had said before. And so, you know, it goes back to your diet and getting exercise and staying healthy. And
but not necessarily for type 1.
Well, type 1, they don't necessarily, they can have, you know, with a type 2 can have a warning. Hey, you're showing signs, your blood sugars are elevating over your annual physical. We need to keep eye on that. When somebody's diagnosed with type 1, their insulin the insulin's not being produced in the pancreas. Yeah. They have to have insulin to survive. So there's no
there's no measures that other correct. Than the insulin that they can do right. In type 1.
Correct. So there is a drastic difference between type 1 and type 2.
Right. But it sounds like you've really helped build a dynamite community here where people who do face this have resources.
Well, I mean, there are numerous people who have been part of this. Scott and I we're very humbled to be named as the honorees at this year's gala, but we see this really as two parents who represent
mm-hmm.
a larger group of people.
Right.
And
yet you have, just to toot your own horn for just a minute, because I can and you probably won't, the fact is you guys have worked really hard for a long time to help this organization and help other parents who are going through this. Because how scary is this? I mean, day one, you must have been terrified.
It is a life-changing event. There's no question about that. And you just, but you know, we're all going to have some cross we have to bear, obviously. And this was one of ours.
Mm-hmm.
But we pull together as a family, and you do what you have to do for your child.
Absolutely.
And that's what we've done. But you know, I'm really proud of Twyla for what, you know, she has given herself to this disease,
mm-hmm.
and this means she's had to make career shifts and to do that for our daughter, but also the counsel that she's been able to provide a lot of other new parents to diabetes and understanding, because it is, I feel so much for these parents. Recently, a young lady that Twyla was talking to, the child was newly diagnosed, and you could just tell that she was in a major fog. I mean, had no idea of what had hit them.
The mother.
And I remember that fog. I remember, you know, I left to go on a business trip, and I have a perfectly healthy daughter on a Sunday morning. And by Wednesday, I have a daughter that's in New Hanover Hospital with readings of 900 on her blood sugars.
Wow.
And ketoacidosis. And so, you know, your life just changes just like that. And it is a cloud that you, you know, cannot even imagine. So we really have a real sense of empathy for folks that are new to this, because their world will never be the same.
Right.
Their child's world will never be the same. And but we try to do our part to help in any way we can. And it's as Twyla said, it is an unbelievable group of people that have taken on this responsibility to effectively put this organization out of business. Hmm. And that's the goal. Because when we have this thing cured, there'll be no need for it. But in the meantime, everything that's going on is designed to hopefully make that child or that adult's life better.
Sure.
And to help the family be able to cope. But there are many layers to this disease that it exposes. And I think that's another thing that the local chapter has done a really good job on, is looking outside, you know, not just the pure medical challenges, but the whole coping issues. Twyla was involved in a recent event that the JDRF put together to help people understand that, you know, the coping skills that are needed with that for parents and grandparents and extended family and friends.
That's where the mentoring comes in.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. Right. So you kind of mentor each other.
That's correct.
Like, been through there,
right.
Been through that door, and I know how dark it is on the other side, and there's light down that tunnel.
That's right. That's right.
Well, and with this disease, it's unique in the fact that the care is at home. You do not right. go to the doctor's office for treatment. Mm-hmm. And when Lauren was diagnosed, we had to quickly switch gears from the role as parents to being caregivers.
Right.
I had to become very comfortable with injecting my 5-year-old with shots.
Mm. And that's scary in and of itself.
Absolutely it is. And, you know, you don't want to see your child hurt. And so there was really no opportunity or time to even respond to the diagnosis, because so quickly they have you learning all of the things you have to know how to do before they release you from the hospital. So I think that people don't realize there's this disease is unique in that the care is in the home. And this year's theme is Families Unite as One. It was a theme that I felt very passionate about. I know for our family, we have a 2 daughters, Lauren, who is 19 and is type 1 diabetic. And then we have Ashley, who's 15, and it has affected all of us.
How does it affect Ashley?
You know, it's amazing. She's become a mother hen.
Uh-huh.
Many nights she has stayed up and checked on her sister.
Yeah.
To make sure she's okay.
Wonderful.
So, you know, it is.
It sounds like it's a real bonding thing, really, for the family in the long run.
It can be.
I mean,
for
you
sure.
all work
it,
together.
It has been
now.
For us.
It can definitely be a bonding thing. The thing that I guess that you have to be able to let go of is those moments of frustration.
Right.
When you make all the right efforts, you do all the right things, and the results just aren't there. The blood sugar readings aren't giving you what you ultimately are working so hard to accomplish.
That's interesting. I guess most of us who don't deal with it, we think, you know, if you take your shots regularly and you're monitoring your food appropriately, you're going to get the response, but that's not always true.
And you've got precursors. For example, one thing we learned real quickly was we could start determining when Lauren was about to get a bad cold or something 7, 8, 9, 10 days ahead of time, because we would lose control of her blood sugars and she's fixing to get sick. You know, you start having predictors that you learn. I joke with people all the time that Twyla became an endocrinologist, you know, because she knows as much about the disease as most of the MDs we talk to sometimes. But there are things that you don't necessarily have control over, even though you try, you know, your hardest to stay on top of it. So that can be frustrating when you're chasing lows or you're trying to bring highs down.
Gosh, it sounds like personal training.
It is.
I mean, it's like you're constantly fighting for that thing you can't quite get to.
You're telling somebody perhaps they need to drink something when they don't want anything to drink, or they need to eat something when they don't want it, or they want something that they can't have.
Right.
So that is a real, real challenge. I mean, but you look, you do what you have to do. That's the way we've tried to.
I assume Lauren has gotten to the point where she doesn't mind injecting herself.
Well, you know,
it's
quite amazing, because she was diagnosed in February of 2000. By summer, she did her own injections. A 5-year-old.
At the age of 5?
Yes.
Wow.
And wanted to.
And what a dynamite.
She wanted to own
the responsibility.
The responsibility.
Good for her.
Yeah.
She must be a Taurus.
Well, her mother is.
Oh, there you go.
So I think she got the gene, even though she was born in the wrong month. But anyway, no, she it was amazing. And I think that she was so relieved to feel good again.
Yeah, that's just great. So tell everyone who's listening more about the event itself. Can anyone go?
Oh, absolutely. We would love anyone to come and learn about JDRF. And become part of our big family. We have the gala coming up, as we were talking about, at the Wilmington Convention Center. And I must say that we have been thrilled with the galas that we have had at this location.
Thank you.
Yes. the staff, everyone has gone way beyond to accommodate and to help us ensure that it's a quality event. We pride ourselves on having the best gala in Wilmington.
Good.
And I will say that with total confidence.
Ooh. So what's it like? What happens there?
Well, we And we have a special guest here at the chef who will address some of the wonderful food.
So we're having dinner.
Oh, absolutely. we will have a wonderful silent auction area with just some unbelievable items. We will have a live auction. We also have a special guest this year for entertainment, and that is Edwin McCain. And we are thrilled to have him this year. I think everyone who listens to the radio knows who he is. Or maybe I'm just that old now, but, we are just, he's quality person. He's
great.
A quality person, and he is unique in that he is very personal, and he, you know, brings the audience in to his performances. So we are just thrilled to have him.
Excellent.
But yes, people can absolutely still purchase tickets for the gala. They can call the JDRF Coastal Carolina branch office and get information. And their phone number is 910-509-9899. Or for additional information, if they prefer to go online, they can go to www.jdrfhopegala.org. And the tickets are $200. And of course, that includes open bar.
And there goes the $200.
And a full dinner and dessert.
Great.
And again, it's a quality event. But beyond that, it's just a great cause and it's great people.
That's great. I'm so glad you're doing this and congratulations on being honored.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to talk about food for just a minute. We're going to talk to you guys again in just 1 second here. Scott.
Yes.
We were talking earlier about how Scott Frazetta would be a fabulous, I think it should be a frozen dessert. And I don't know. I think some kind of a frozen dessert would be wonderful.
Something Italian.
Something Italian, yeah. You know, I don't know. It sounds so yummy. Scott and Twyla thought maybe you needed to have your own brand of sauce.
I thought about
spaghetti
it.
Spaghetti sauce.
Right? The name is just so good, Scott Frazetta. Thanks for coming down here.
Thank you for
the
having
studio,
me.
Taking a break from the kitchen.
Yep.
From the galley.
Yep. It's nice to get out.
So how long have you been with the convention center?
Since we opened, about 3.5 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you always been in production of food for huge numbers like this?
Not this big, but I've kind of been ramping up to it.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about your background.
I grew up in Wilmington here. I went to high school here.
Wow. Where'd you go?
Hoggard.
Hey, all those people out there went to Hoggard.
Woo-hoo. Yep. Hoggard High. I was down in Charleston for about 10 years, went to culinary school there. And worked in various restaurants down there.
Okay.
And came back about 10 years ago. I've been working at country clubs here, catering company. I was out at Corning. And now I'm at the convention center.
Wow, that's really cool. So tell us about your job. What's the life of an executive chef at a convention center like?
It's different. It's not like a restaurant. We're events driven there. So everything we do is based on a single event. So every week is different. Groups of people, different staff that I have in the kitchen.
We do
a lot of work with temp companies and temporary labor.
Oh, is that right?
So a lot of our staff is it's different. Every month I have a pretty much a different crew of people.
Well, so give us an example. So say you're sitting down with the organizers of the event for JDRF.
Yep.
And how do you go about deciding what are people going to be served?
It's a process. We start from the beginning of, and we talk about menus and you know, how the service is going to go and, you know, whether it's cocktail and hors d'oeuvre hour onto the dinner and dessert. And usually it's back and forth, just talking and discussing expectations and what we can kind of create back in the kitchen and make it all come together.
Do you start with a basic menu that you always offer up or do you come up with new ideas?
We have our entire catering menu. It's a huge menu.
Is it?
But a lot of times we do a lot of just customized menu. People want specific things, themed nights. There could be a lot of different reasons. We'll customize anything.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So I keep seeing this word Savor. What is that?
Savor is the food service division of SMG, who is the catering contract for the convention center.
And Susan, who is SMG?
SMG is our parent company based in Philadelphia, just outside of Philadelphia. And they have been managing the operation of the building as well as the food and beverage operation since we opened in November 2010.
Oh, I see.
So we also manage many, many other buildings across the United States too. So.
Gotcha. So Scott, besides dealing, you know, with the food, besides being the food guy, mm-hmm. are you also the ordering the food guy? Are you also the hiring and firing guy?
I'm everything. I'm the everything guy.
That's a little bit of stress. I mean, you've had some pretty big events there.
Yeah, we have. I think our biggest one was about just under 2,200 people plated. It was a plated dinner.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even get an invitation to that.
Well, it was a military ball. So,
oh, well, there you have it.
Yep.
So have you ever been, I have a very, I'm going to give a shout out to a previous guest that was on our show. Fanfare Catering, Fanny Slater, dear friend of the stations. Fanny was just on a competition this week in New York at Rachel Ray. Mm. And yeah, very exciting. She made the first cut. She's on for the next week. We'll see if she gets the next cut.
That's good.
So food competitions are top of mind for me right now. Have you ever done a food competition?
Yeah, we've done the Epicurean Evening culinary competition at the Convention Center. We've hosted it for the past 3 years.
That sounds cool. What's that like?
It's about 25 to 30 chefs from around town, local guys and women that have restaurants. It could be anything, catering companies around town. Everyone brings their best dish forward and kind of serves one dish through the night. There's about 500 or 600 people that attend it. There's a blind competition in the beginning of the night that everyone just submits their dish. And there's a panel that reviews it and judges it.
I want to be a panel member.
I know. I kind of do, too.
We could arrange that.
Media guest.
We're going to have the blue plate now.
Yeah, right.
That's funny. So, and how about your cooking? Have you ever been up for an award? Or have you been in a competition?
Yeah, we've done it for 3 years. The first 2 years, we won the People's Choice Award.
Wow.
Yeah, we've done a Grey Goose vodka crab cake the first year. We did a lobster strudel the second year. And the last year, we did a saffron risotto with a seared scallop and a champagne cream spinach. We got the...
I'll take the spinach. Sounds
good. Yeah. It was good. Goodness. It was a really good dish.
Did these ever make it onto your menu?
In one way or another. I do. I really do.
It depends on how big the budget is. Is that what you're saying?
We've played around a lot with risotto in the restaurant. And I try to, you know, just interject things here and there. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
What he forgot to tell you was that he did win what I call the grand slam of all their awards. And that is... it was best taste for the seared scallop dish, mm-hmm. best taste, best appetizer, and best in show.
Oh, mm-hmm. my goodness.
So he won all of the awards last year. So he literally has been ramping up to the big kahuna of getting all the awards. So we're very, very proud of him. Yeah. And we get this back in the compliments and all of the accolades that people write to us and call in to us and email to us. And so I think that's just, fostering more creativity with the chef and the staff. So,
is that your favorite part of your job?
What's that?
Coming up with new menus.
Oh, yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
Because it's always changing. Different ingredients, different trends, different things happening. Yeah. People like to see different things.
You know, we had Dr. Springer from the community college on last week or 2 weeks ago. And, they have obviously a really big program there for training people. How do you find employees, and do you ever work with interns? I don't know if they even have an internship program there. But.
Yeah, we've worked with the community college before several times. We have events coming up that we're bringing them in.
Excellent.
So it's a great resource for students. They're eager to learn.
Yeah. Tell us now, what do you look for in an employee for the Convention Center specifically?
Above everything else, a good work ethic is the foundation for everything. I could teach them knife skills and different food preparation techniques, but you can usually size somebody up within the first hour or two on how they're going to work out. I do. I've gotten really good at it quickly.
Let's hope the interviews don't last that long. Can you size them up in the interview? Oh, goodness. What kind of things will they find if they get a job with you? What's the working experience like at the Convention Center? Other than having to work with Susan, which,
right,
of course,
right,
is like the dream job, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It's fun. We start about a day or so out. We start just prepping the food a day out. And the day of, it's usually a longer day, and we're there kind of all day getting things done. A lot of our events all geared towards one plated dinner with maybe hors d'oeuvres and things like that. So that's our whole thing, is gearing the whole night towards that one menu.
Yeah,
so it's very different than a restaurant or anything else I've ever worked in. That's why it's fun.
So I spent many years as a waitress and putting myself through school, mm-hmm. and as a bartender. And the most important thing that you probably could do for anybody right now is, if they ever have to wait tables or stand on their feet all day long cooking, shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get shoes that you
sensible
can wear
shoes
all the time? I mean,
you gotta
seriously
have good shoes.
Do you wear the chef clogs?
Yeah, all the time.
Do you?
You have to have good shoes, especially in a building like the convention center. It's big.
Yeah.
You're constantly walking. You know, I keep a pedometer on me, and I'll walk.
Do you get your 10,000 steps every day?
Oh, but before my morning coffee.
Oh!
Yeah.
No!
Yes.
I don't think I can take the first step without the
every
coffee.
Day.
But... mm-hmm. Well, good for you.
Yes.
Good for you. What else didn't I ask you guys about the convention center?
Well, we also have other events upcoming. Actually, just before the Hope Gala on May 17th.
Oh, thank you.
We
did not say that. May 17th is the Hope Gala.
Is the YWCA, the Young Women's Christian Association,
mm-hmm.
YWCA will have their 100th year gala.
Wow.
With
and
us
that's this weekend,
this
right?
Saturday.
The
that's
third?
Right. And as I understand it, they are still selling some tickets.
Okay.
So if you have an opportunity to come to that wonderful event, it's going to be great. So
now, can people, Susan, find out how to reach the organizations through
the convention center
directly?
Absolutely.
So if they want to buy a ticket for JDRF.
That's
right. they can actually contact you if they forget how to reach.
Yes, they can. they can go on our website, which is the easiest way, and that's www.businessmadecasual.com. So we just have a nice long word there and put it in your little screensaver and you'll be good to go. Because all of the events that are the most fun are at the convention center. So, but yeah, we can. We have lots of other events coming down the pike in the summertime and fall.
And you have a nice calendar on the site. So.
We do. We have lots of great things on that site. There's a virtual tour, so you can feel like you're walking around the convention center.
How about in the kitchen? Do you get to go see where Scott works?
We haven't done that.
Oh, let's go do that. That's the next virtual tour.
It's
a good idea. That's a good idea.
Okay, that's great. You guys, have you thought of anything you wanted to mention that you didn't get to get out before we
Well, there was one other thing that I wanted to make sure I mentioned. We have some wonderful live auction items,
tell
mentioned,
me about
and there are a couple of them I wanted to just point it out to people, because this would give me reason just to buy a ticket alone. There's going to be a New Orleans trip for four that includes airline accommodations at the Ritz-Carlton.
Oh, my.
And VIP dining at two of Emeril Lagasse's restaurants.
Oh, as long as we're talking food.
And I know that's right up your alley,
yep.
Scott.
Yep.
So maybe you need a bid on that one.
Okay.
And in addition to that, we have a fabulous Bahamas trip to Exuma for a family of six.
And these are both on the silent auction?
These are going to be the live auction.
A live auction. I was going to say,
yes.
That sounds
yes
bigger.
Yes. So
I have bid on many of the items in your silent auction before, and I have an aversion to golf, so JDRF has always supplied me with lots of golf that I pay for, but it's for a good cause. So.
Right. Well, we appreciate your support, and there will be golf there this year, too,
Yay!
Promise.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Scott and Twyla Satterfield, for coming down and talking
to
us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Susan?
Yes, ma'am.
It's great to kick off a whole new show for the convention center, so you have a platform for all of your guests to come on and talk
mm-hmm.
about their events.
We want to promote their events, which promotes the city, promotes us, and talks about our wonderful food and different things the chef is doing to make us more popular.
Okay. Well, that is the end of the show for today. This is Anne Revelle-Petcher signing off for Wilmington Business Radio. Until next time.